bootleggers, scofflaws, teetotalers, all kinds of vocabulary from the Prohibition era lives on today, as does the fascination with that period in American history. From HBO's drama Boardwalk Empire to the speakeasy-style bars that have popped up around the country with early 20th century alcohols and mixers, some go as far as to adopt the secret passwords and rituals of that era. Now, a new series by the documentary filmmaker Ken Burns tells the full story of the rise and fall of the 18th Amendment and the culture it spawned. It begins on PBS tonight, and Ken Burns is in our New York studio to talk more about it. Ken Burns, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
At the beginning of the documentary, you set the stage with a voiceover reading from a gentleman named Captain Frederick Marriott and his views on the American people's drinking habits in the 19th century. Let's have a listen.
They say that the British cannot fix anything properly without a dinner, but I'm sure the Americans can fix nothing without a drink. If you meet, you drink. If you make acquaintance, you drink. If successful in elections, they drink and rejoice. If not, they drink and swear. They commence it early in life and they continue it until they soon drop into the grave.
Ken Burns, who was Captain Frederick Marriott, and why was his general perception sound so close to what I might think about modern-day America?
Yeah, he was an astute British observer of our times. We were awash in alcohol in the 19th century. Our first of three episodes is called A Nation of Drunkards. That's what we feared we were becoming, drinking five, six, seven times the amount of alcohol that we consume today, towns littered with inebriates, asylums filling up with drunkards. And very understandably, a temperance movement was begun initially to drink less, a very understandable thing.
You actually, in the movie, there's a description of a women's movement in which women go out and pray outside of saloons.
In Cincinnati, fire companies sprayed the praying women with freezing water. Bartenders pretended to welcome them inside, drenched them with buckets of beer, then drove them back out into the snow.
Yes, in Ohio in the 1870s, Eliza Jane Thompson leads a congregation of women outside of her church, and they close down some apothecaries which were selling alcohol for, quote, medicinal purposes, and saloons and taverns. And it's a movement that takes off. It's the Women's Crusade, and it's one of these wonderful things where they're finding themselves, and they can't no longer, as one person comments, goes back to, you know, sewing and keeping house. They've turned themselves into activists.
They can hardly ever again persuade themselves or others that they are content to let the men attend to the politics of the country while they play Pretty Polly or Bridget.
What are the things that surprised you about the rise of the Prohibition movement?
Well, I think there's almost everything that surprised us as we were getting into it, from the minute details to the larger issues that resonate today, the anti-immigrant aspect of it, the notion that America was changing and a group of people in the country felt they were losing control of their country and wanted to take it back. They would employ tactics that seemed so utterly modern in the execution of their objectives. All of that just resonated with us, and it went beyond the flapper in her short dress and bobbed hair dancing drunk on a speakeasy table or the Model T careening around rain-slick Chicago streets, Tommy guns blasting. We have that. But it seemed much more interesting in how this came about and how it was initially applied once the Prohibition Amendment went into effect, and of course then how the House of Cards came crashing down.
Just a few minutes after Prohibition went into effect, six masked bandits with pistols emptied two freight cars full of whiskey. Another gang stole four casks of grain alcohol from a government-bonded warehouse, and still another hijacked a truck loaded with bourbon.
Alcohol at the time was sometimes prescribed for various ailments by your doctor.
Yes, that was one of the loopholes.
That was one of the loopholes. A great many people went to get their prescriptions filled. Also, I remember one part of the film talked about houses of worship. Also had
well, one of the exceptions was, of course, to sacramental uses. And so you find congregations in Jewish communities growing tenfold and suddenly having rabbis named O'Shanahan and Kelly and all of this stuff as people were seeking desperately to find access to alcohol. I mean, human beings have been drinking alcohol for as long as there have been human beings. And all of a sudden we had this law that said you can't do what you've done just as a matter of course in your daily life. You can't do what is a part of the rituals of your culture or of your faith. And it began to crumble almost immediately by the unenforceability of it, by how unequally the law was applied, and by the monumental hypocrisy in its application and in some of the people who publicly supported it and privately continued to drink.
Another interesting aspect of this is that by the time the Prohibition era is coming to its end, a nation that is effectively supposed to be dry is now the largest importer of cocktail shakers, that it essentially invigorated the culture it was trying to end.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the violation of the law became attractive, sort of sexy, something one did. The speakeasy culture was glamorized in songbooks from Tin Pan Alley and in newspapers and magazines and in the movies and on the radio, and it was popular. It seems so crazy now in retrospect to think of something that was illegal being so sort of commonly celebrated in popular culture, but it was. I love that statistic, the largest importers of cocktail shakers. It just shows you the inherent impossibility of really applying this law.
Ken Burns, thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Ken Burns. He, along with co-director Lynn Novick, produced the documentary Prohibition. The series begins tonight on PBS. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Audie Cornish.